And every time we get to that won't back down part, they want me to rewind it back so they can keep hearing that. So they love that. Thanks, guys. We're going to get to the Modern Family clip here in just a little bit. So we're not going to start with that quite yet. So just hold tight, all right? Some time ago, I got a call from a newspaper, and they asked me if I wanted to subscribe. And I said, no, I'm not interested. They had some low rate and, you know, some deal they were throwing out there. And I said I wasn't interested. And they said, well, why not? And I said, well, to be honest, anything that's in your paper, I can read online for free. You know, so why would I pay, you know, to read something online that I can get for free? And they're like, well, that's true, but you don't get everything in the online edition. You don't get the coupons. You don't get the ads and that kind of thing. I said, well, you're right. But I can get a lot of that stuff emailed to me in my inbox. So it's just like, and the gal that was trying to sell me kind of hung up. And I wasn't trying to be rude, but these are just some interesting times that we live in where technology and stuff has changed the way that we live life. And newspapers are maybe are kind of fading away just a little bit as we go to more online media. And so it got to me thinking, you know, what else might be on life support here in 2010? What else, you know, in the next few years might we not see a lot of because of the changes in our society? And so the first one's kind of connected to the newspaper. Go ahead and chain roll that picture. It's the classifieds, right? Why would you give someone, a company, money to sell your armoire or whatever it is to a limited readership when you can go where? Craigslist for how much? Free! To an unlimited readership, right? I mean, you got 5 billion people that can see that ad for nothing. Okay, second one, checkbooks. Okay, now if you're under 25, chances are you don't even have one of these, and if you do, you rarely use it. We have online bill pay, we have credit cards, debit cards, you can text donations to places like the Red Cross. There's even technology, not here in America yet, but there's even technology where your cell phone can be used as your primary means of payment. You can walk up to a Coke machine in Denmark, pull out yourself, get a Coke, okay? So, you know, I'm in my 30s. Thanks, Pastor Doug, for that. I'm in my 30s, and so I use my checkbook a little bit more, but still, it's pretty rare. Okay, next one, the nightly news. Now, we're not going to take a show of hands, but really, how many people watch the news at 5:30 or 6 or 10? A few of you do, okay? But today, you can get the news wherever you want it, whenever you want it, and from whatever angle or perspective you want it. I don't need to wait till Brian Williams comes on at 5:30 to tell me what's going on. I can hop online and find out what's going on. If I'm Brian or Katie, I'm dusting off my resume in the next few years, looking for a different gig, all right? This next one is the last one, but this is the Christmas letter, all right? Now, I was told that we're still sending one out, you know, this year, but I think in a few years, the Christmas letter is going to go bye-bye, okay? Now, you know what the Christmas letter is, right? It's the letter you get from people you only hear from at Christmas time, and it's really just a big reminder of how much better their life is than your life, right? About how their son is quarterbacking the football team, and their daughter's valedictorian, and their dog is better than your dog, okay? All right? Now, seriously, do we need a Christmas letter when we have Facebook and Twitter and blogs? I can hear about all that stuff throughout the year. I don't need an update from you at Christmas time, okay? And what about the Christmas picture? You can upload your photos, right? I mean, I can see pictures of you throughout the year, okay? Most of you will still get one from us, though, this year. So, but seriously, these are some crazy times that we live in. Things like Facebook and Twitter and blogs and email and texting and all this, they give each of us a voice. Anyone can say anything at any time, anywhere, all right? And I'm going to channel my inner geek a little bit. I've been reading some books lately. One of the books is called Cognitive Surplus, and the author says that these are some really interesting times, and it's a very participative society, and that people, because anyone can publish anything, anyone can print anything, anyone can say anything, people now can participate in ways they never could before. It used to be that only movie companies and media companies could make a video and have people watch it. But now any one of us with a video camera can film anything, load it up to YouTube, and if it goes viral, you've got millions of people watching that thing. It used to be that Encyclopedia Britannica was the authorized, you know, gatekeeper of all that was precise and true in our world when it came to facts and knowledge. But now anyone with an internet connection can go where? Wikipedia. You can edit whatever is there. You can add. You can create your own. You can be an encyclopedia writer if you want to. This is even causing some concern for the government. The author here says that in 2005, when the London subways were bombed, the government put out a PR release that said it was the result of a power surge. And what that was a stall tactic meant to buy time, find out what really happened, and then come up later with a new PR release to say, you know, what was really going on. They did some research. In the first 80 minutes after the subways in London were attacked, there were 1,300 entries online that said it was the result of explosives. So who are you going to believe? The government that said it was a power surge? Or 1,300 people saying, look, I don't know what it was, but there was boosh. Okay? All right? Everyone's got a voice. And everyone can say anything. Everyone's got something to say. And there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of potential that can come from that. But there's also some criticism to that as well. Right? Some people say, well, look, there's no editing. There's no filter. There's no checking out where the information came from. There's no accuracy. Everyone can just publish anything, whether it's true or not. And so in some ways, the world we find ourselves in was much like the world that a band of Christians found themselves in when this guy named James writes them a letter. So if you're in the New Testament, turn to James 9, page 930, 931 in your Bibles in front of you. We're going to kind of bounce around there a little bit. But in chapter 3, if you look at the first couple of verses, James has some strong words about words. And here's what's happening in this context. James is writing to a group of Christians who have fled persecution in Jerusalem. So they're kind of scattered all throughout the Middle East. And so what's happening in this context is that these churches, there's no structure for who gets to teach. And there's no process for qualifying someone to teach or not. In fact, the role that got to teach was open. It was vacant. And so James says, you know, you really shouldn't want to teach because those who teach will be judged, you know, more harshly. And in the churches back then, we had lots of people trying to teach and lots of people trying to say lots of different things. And you have to ask yourself, well, why? It wasn't because of the pay. And it wasn't because there was some sweet material, you know, like a house or a car that was connected to the gig. That stuff comes later in the development of this profession. So why would someone without, you know, pay or whatever want to teach? Want to be able to speak to the church? Well, maybe they wanted influence. Maybe they had a pride issue. Maybe they wanted power. Maybe they wanted, you know, whatever. But it was for some of those motives that a lot of these folks were getting up and teaching. And what they would do where they were teaching and they would pass down some untruths or pass down some bad theology, or they would, you know, criticize another group that was teaching. And there was just a lot of infighting going on. And there was no system. There was no structure for determining whether or not they could, in fact, be there. So James says, you're doing it for the wrong motives. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. And so then James goes on in chapter 3 to really talk about the power of words and to talk about how we can use our tongues and talk about the power of controlling what we say. Because he's got a lot of people that weren't exercising that. But before we jump into the rest of that chapter, let's pick up the clip from Modern Family. Check it out.
Okay, everybody, the food's in there, the drinks are in there, I'll be in here.
Hold on, Jerry, I think we should address the elephant in the room. Luke, Manny, bring it in. Come on, huddle up. Football. Now, in light of what happened at school today, do you have any feelings you'd like to express? I think this is the proper forum to discuss that.
Both of you. Now, in this family, do we kick and punch each other, or do we love each other?
Love each other.
That's right. I'll be in the den.
So,
I brought dessert.
Okay, thank you. I make pie too.
You never have too many pies, right?
Okay, whoa. Everybody, take a deep breath. Let's think about getting real.
No.
Why, Phil, no? What is Phil doing?
I'm just gonna say it. There's tension between you two. Bam, it's out there.
I'm gonna kill you.
I think he's right. And I think we should talk about it.
That's what I'm talking about. You two talking about it.
Okay, the truth? You sometimes feel like you don't like me.
Wow. Powerful stuff. Claire, tell us how that makes you feel.
Right now I'm feeling a lot of anger.
No, don't tell me. Tell her.
Gloria, right now I'm really angry at Phil.
Oh, let's respect the process.
Gloria, I don't know why you think I don't like you.
Well, sometimes when you see me, you make that face.
What face? Like this? I do not make a face like that.
Oh, my God. That is so Claire.
Mitchell.
See? She does that with everyone. It's just her face.
No, it's not just the face. From the beginning, I feel like Manny and I are not welcome in this family. That is so crazy. No, it's not so crazy. It's how I feel.
I am sorry if you feel that way. I really am. Because from the moment I met you, I have tried to make you feel comfortable with us.
You think it's all in my head?
No, kind, I don't know. I mean, we really love having you and Manny in our family.
Really?
Really. So, you don't have to be so defensive.
I do that, don't I?
I'm feeling a hug. I was thinking group hug, but just...
Hey, there we go. How's the bounce? You look like you patched things up pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
We can learn so much from the children. But it seems kind of silly now what you're even fighting about, huh?
I made fun of his accent.
What accent?
I made fun of him for having the same thing for lunch every day. I made fun of him because his mom used to dig coal.
What?
He said you were a coal digger.
Okay, I think we can move on.
Who said I was a coal digger?
That's what my mom told me. What's a coal digger?
Sweetheart, you heard it wrong. It's gold digger.
I'm going to have to call you back.
Well, I really do not think that I remember ever saying that.
Well, you said in the car, you said at Christmas, you said next year.
Okay, mister leaves his sweatshirts at school every day, suddenly remembers everything. Thank you.
Honey, what's all in my head, huh?
Oh, listen, Gloria, it was like a year ago before I knew you.
Nice going. Now my mom and my sister are fighting.
Oh, funny stuff. And really a good, you know, compilation of topics we've been discussing this month. You know, 2 weeks ago, Pastor Doug talked about conflict, and last week, Pastor Ben talked about marriage, and today we're talking about words, and that clip really just brings all three kind of home together there. It's the issue here is Claire's use of the word gold digger to refer to her stepmom, Gloria, okay? And so at the beginning of the clip, there's this obvious tension between the two. If you watched the show last season, there was obvious tension between the two there as well. They appear to patch things up, only to find out that Claire has called her stepmom a gold digger, which the kids thought was coal digger, okay? When the utterance is said, you can see on Claire's face, there's nothing more she would like to do than to take that back. You never take back the words that we've said. You know, how many of us have found ourselves in that same spot when we wish we could take back the gossip that we passed down back? We wish we could take the curse that we just said back. We wish we could take the sarcastic joke back. In James, there's this interesting tension with our words. If you look at chapter 126, James says, if you claim to be religious but do not control your tongue, you are fooling yourself and your religion is worthless. And then back to chapter 3, verse 2, he says, indeed, we all make many mistakes. If we can control our tongues, we'd be perfect. We can also control ourselves in every other way. If we can't control our tongue, faith, our religion, is worthless. Pastor Doug mentioned the series we're talking about in October about the dumb things Christians say. If you polled people as to why they're not here this morning, or why they're not in any church this morning, or why they don't follow Christ, I bet a big reason why is that we talk like the rest of the world talks, and we say some pretty dumb things. And outside of dumb things that we say, we joke like everyone else, we curse like everyone else, we gossip like everyone else, we're sarcastic like everyone else. And so there's not much difference when it comes to our speech and the rest of the world's speech. James is convinced that our words, our tongues, what we say is really the beginning of the end for us as a human being. He says if we can control our tongues, we would be perfect. If you could control what you say, if I could control what I'd say, I would be miles ahead in dealing with my sin. If I could just simply control what comes out of my mouth. Look down to verses 3 and 4. James says, you know what? It's not all bad. Our words, our tongues have some ability to do some good things as well. He says, we can make a large horse go wherever we want by means of a small bit in its mouth. And a small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though the winds are strong. In the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches. And so James uses a couple of illustrations here that the ancient readers and listeners hearing this would be very familiar with. The horse would have been the most powerful animal they would have had a recognition of. It's not like they went to zoos and saw, you know, lions, tigers, and bears. Oh my, all right? A horse would have been a real strong animal for them, and you can see that the small bit has the ability to control where the horse goes, similar to the ships. Again, a ship would have been one of the largest structures that the modern people, or these ancient people, would have been familiar with. And ships went on seas with large waves and strong winds, and yet they were controlled by a small rudder as to what direction they went. Anyone that's ever been on a paddle boat, if you don't push the rudder down, you're not going to get very far. All right? And so James says, let the tongue, our words, have incredible potential to do some really good things. Think of I Have a Dream. Think of 4 and 7 years ago. Think of all these ways that we can do good through what we say, to influence and to coach and to encourage and to motivate, to build up and to forgive. But then James flips back to the tension. Look at verse 5 and 6. But a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. And the tongue is a flame of fire. It is a whole world of wickedness corrupting your entire body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself. It only takes a spark to get a campfire going and to get a wildfire going. In fact, it's interesting, when you read the news, you know, we're just getting done with wildfire season, oftentimes it's someone that forgot to put out their little campfire, or it's someone that, you know, one little spark or whatever sets off an amazing fire. One careless word can set off an entire firestorm. I've got a tube of toothpaste with me here this morning. And, you know, when I brush my teeth, I like to push the tube up from the bottom and then roll it, because I think that maximizes the amount of toothpaste you're going to get from the tube, right? Okay, but sometimes my kids, when they're brushing their teeth, and if we're not monitoring them, it's just, rah, right? It's just right from the middle, and then this is what's all over your vanity or your kitchen or your bathroom sink, right? Just this goob of mess. The problem, at least from my perspective, even though it's only a couple of bucks, is once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't get it back in. You could try. It wouldn't be worth your time, and you wouldn't be very successful. Once the toothpaste is gone, it's gone. You can't get it back. Same thing with our words, right? Once you say them, they are gone. And we even have a saying, oh, I take back what I say, which is great for this, you know, maybe the between you and another person say, hey, I'm sorry for what I said, but you can never take back what you said. It's out there. Once you say it, it's out there. Look at verses 7 through 10. James ends with some somber thoughts. He says, people can tame all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and fish, but no one can tame the tongue. It is restless and evil, full of deadly poison. Sometimes it praises our Father, Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who have been made in the image of God. And so blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. Surely, my brothers and sisters, this is not right. I don't know about you. When I hear that, when I read that, I go, ugh. You know, just 20 minutes ago, we were singing, and we were praising God, and we were glorifying, and we were worshiping our Lord and Father. And then how long will it be until we find ourselves in a position where our tongue is full of a deadly poison? And I know that I often forget that every human being has been made in the image of God, that every human is stamped with God's image. And so that when I make a joke of someone, or when I criticize someone unfairly, or when I am sarcastic with someone, I fail to remember that they too are created in the image of God. And that there's probably a better way to speak about that person, or to that person. The other day, I had all four of my kids at the park. My wife was working, so it was a nice day, so let's take the kiddos to the park. I want to preface this story by saying that my normally sound parental judgment was being clouded by one of my kids having a tish of a meltdown, okay? So as you hear my story, just remember that I've got a meltdown happening in the background, okay? So just want to say that, okay? We were at the park, and a couple of my kids wanted to go down the slide. And they got to the top of the slide, and apparently two kids at the top of the slide said they couldn't go down the slide. I'm going to call them the gatekeeper too in this story, okay? And so my kids, they come and they tattle. I say, kids, just go down the slide, okay? Just you know, go down the slide. Don't worry about it. So all four of them end up at the bottom of the slide together. I kind of say to the gatekeeper too, hey, I'm watching, all right? Let my kids go down the slide, okay? Dealing with meltdown still, all right? Next time, a couple minutes later, same situation repeats itself, except it gets a little bit more interesting. Because one of the gatekeeper two has kicked, apparently, one of my two, and has also said that my two wear diapers. Now, those are some fighting words, all right? So my two come back and say, the gatekeeper two kicked us, and they said, we wear diapers. Meltdown still happening with one of my other kids, all right? So I muster all of my parental wisdom and judgment, and I say, well, just tell them they wear diapers too. There's a mom a few yards away from me playing with her daughter. She gives me that great advice, Dad. Look. Like there would be a mom on the planet that wouldn't say that, right? You know? And, you know, why is it, Claire kind of said in the video too, why is it that, you know, my kids, they rarely listen to me the first time I ask them to do anything, you know, except when I tell them to make fun of a kid? Boom. We're going to immediately, you know, apply that one, Dad. So a couple, you know, sooner than the words in my mouth, they're running around the park going, you are never so, you are never so. I mean, they're just chasing these kids around the park. I got a firestorm on my hands. And it's about to get worse because the gatekeeper two run towards their mom and dad. Their dad is not a not any bigger than I am, but he's tougher than I am. He's got like piercings and tattoos and stuff all over that I don't want to mess with. And so I say, you know, boys, tell the kids you're sorry. Well, Dad, you said, yeah, great defense. Your dad is a moron. He was wrong to give you that advice. Say you're sorry. And so they do, and you know, I had forgotten the words of James. I had, you know, I saw two punks make my kids. And I forgot that those punks are also stamped with God's image, that they're also created in the image of God. And they deserve better from a grown man than to tell his two kids to make fun of them. There's better ways that we could have solved that. And so this morning we started with some things that maybe are going to be obsolete in a few years. And so I want to add on to that list a little bit with maybe some things that have to do with our words that hopefully we can maybe work at kind of ridding out of our day-to-day speech. How about gossip? You know, who doesn't enjoy getting the scoop on someone or dishing the scoop on somebody else or talking about someone else with a different somebody else? The trouble is that oftentimes the stuff we're talking about isn't true, It harms people, and it does very little to deal with the actual problem that happened in the first place. What about cursing? Generally don't hear a lot of cursing at Hillcrest on a Sunday morning, all right? But, you know, if we follow each other for, you know, days or weeks at a time, we're probably going to let some things slip. And the problem with cursing isn't the actual words per se. The problem is that we connect a curse word with somebody else, typically. And when we use that, we demean that person. We fail to remember that that person that we're cursing at or about was also created in the image of God. What about sarcasm? I grew up with a mom who said, there's no place in this world for sarcasm. To which I would usually sarcastically say, except when you use it, right, Mom? You know, I guess I'm getting what I did myself, okay? And I'm not trying to say we can never, you know, joke or have a good time, but the problem with sarcasm is there's often sometimes some truth connected to it. And rather than just talk to the person about it or let it be alone, we just joke about it. We keep joking about it. We never really talk about that issue. What about thinking before we speak? Or talking before we think? Speak before we think. Some of us, you know, we pride ourselves maybe a little bit on, I just shoot straight, and I just tell it like it is. Sometimes, though, those folks don't like to be shot straight at or told like it is. I think we could all do better if we remember what our kindergarten teacher said or our elementary school teacher said, and that is to think before we talk. Okay? And you know what? No matter how advanced our technology or society becomes, I hope there are some words that never become obsolete. And maybe we could work on some of these things as we go about our days and weeks. How about this one? How about I'm sorry? Governments, business, sports, everyone's always trying to blame someone else. It wasn't my fault, wasn't my fault, wasn't my fault. When something's your fault or when something's my fault, let's admit it. Let's take responsibility for it. Let's say we're sorry. Let's keep the ball moving, rolling down. Let's not try to, you know, blame somebody else. What about thank you? Let's hope thank you never goes out of style. These are some busy times that we live in. Busy, busy, busy. Everyone's busy, 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 busy. And sometimes we get so busy that we forget to show appreciation to the people in our lives, our spouses, our children, our family, our friends, our bosses, our coworkers, our neighbors. You know, here from a Hillcrest perspective, we are so thankful for those of you that volunteer and those of you that serve, whatever it is you do that's connected to this place or really any of the service you do in any of your day-to-day lives. Because you know what? You don't have to. Volunteering and serving is a choice you make to do with your time. We want to thank you for the time that you give here. How about these ones? You're good at encouragement. I hope encouragement never becomes obsolete. It's not something that I'm the best at. But each one of us has people in our lives that we can say, you know what, you're good at this, you're good at that. I think you do really well here. There's some research that says in our jobs, in our careers, that we're only motivated to do so much through pay. Once we reach a certain salary or reach a certain pay level, we're not going to put out any more effort or motivation when it comes to jobs. But that if your boss or your supervisor or your team or whatever encourages you, gives you some positive feedback, tells you what you're doing well, you might just work a little harder. You might just feel engaged more to your job and to your career. There's some power encouraging other people. And the last one is questions. Most of us do okay at talking. I haven't met very many people that I've had to help actually talk. But how many of us ask questions and then stop to hear the answer? I bet there are a few of you this morning, I asked, how's it going? And I didn't really care to hear how it was going. I just meant that as a, hi, hey, I recognize you. But what would happen if we had some people in our lives that we asked that question to and we stopped and we paused and we listened for the answers? I know, it's easier said than done, and it's been a tough message because I'm not the best at some of this stuff either. You know, earlier in James's letter, he says this. He says, we ought to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And perhaps as we talk about words, as we think about the ways we can use our speech in the days to come, let's be quick to listen. Let's be a little bit slower in speaking. Okay. God, thanks for this opportunity to be here this morning. We thank you for your words to us, and we thank you, God, for the choice and the freedom we have with the words that we can use. God, may we be slow in our speaking. God, may no unwholesome word come out of our mouth except that which is edifying to others. May we leave here knowing the power of our words on the people that we come across. God, we thank you so much for who you are. May you bless us as we leave this place. It's in your name we pray. Have a great rest of the day. We hope to see you about 2 o'clock over at Todd Hill for the celebration. Have a great Sunday.